And we're back once again to another Mission Impossible half-isode with Mike, and Oscar. I am your co-host, Mike One. This is co-host also Mike.
Also Mike here, loving these rewatches. We're having fun getting our action movie fixed.
A lot better than like I remembered liking them in the first place. But yeah, we're doing Mission Impossible 3 today. Just, I guess, third installation of this Mission Impossible review that we're working our way up to. Mission Impossible Fallout coming out in just another week or so at the end of the month in July. It's going to be the sixth installation of the Mission Impossible franchise, and we kind of started doing these half episodes, dedicating one per Mission Impossible installation to kind of catch you up, catch us up, and get us ready for Tom Cruise's 22nd year as Ethan Hunt.
It's incredible. And he talked about it earlier in the Mission Impossible, you know, production profiles as this being kind of his signature series for his career. It's shaping up that way, man. Well,
it's definitely not The Mummy. But
it's
yes.
Not The Mummy. But he's tried for other things. Jack Reacher.
Jack Reacher.
He's tried.
But this one seems to be working, and we're going to talk about the financials and the box offices in just a little bit. But Mission Impossible 3, we're coming off the tails of the first two half-isodes where we covered Mission Impossible 1.
Loved it.
Big success. Mission Impossible 2. So we'll see if this series, if this can rebound and bring the franchise back to relevancy. This came out in the year 2006. So we're 6 years removed from the second time we saw Ethan Hunt on the silver screen, like we usually do. Also, Mike's going to lead us off with some cast and crew notes. What do we have?
MI3 is J.J. Abrams' feature film directorial debut. He directed episodes of Felicity, Lost, and Alias. He was a producer, an executive producer for those shows, kind of a creator, modern-day creator of those TV juggernauts there.
It's amazing to see how far he's come in just a decade, really.
I mean, he's been as hot a name as it gets for
he's royalty right
15
now.
Years. He'd go on to direct Star Trek, Super 8, Star Trek Into Darkness, of course, Star Wars, The Force Awakens, and MI3 kind of starts off run with blockbusters. So he's proving to the world, J.J. Abrams, that he can handle big-budget Hollywood blockbusters with this film. And, of course, he's going to direct Star Wars Episode 9.
Yeah, he's like a franchise savior, too. He gets Mission Impossible back on track. He's got Star Wars. Everybody loved The Force Awakens.
The critics slammed that last MI2. As good as it did box office wise, I felt like he brought a lot of credibility back to the franchise.
1000% in agreement with that statement.
Those movie specs you're going to talk about in a little bit are going to definitely prove our points there. A writing credit goes to the television series creator from the 1960s, Bruce Geller, once again.
He's got to be so happy about this.
Cha-ching,
just sitting
cha-ching.
Back there.
Abrams also gets a writing credit, and the screenplay is said to be written by Alias/Star Wars writer Alex Kurtzman, and film/TV writer Roberto Orci. They both worked together a bunch. They both worked with Abrams on Alias.
Yeah, they seem to be kind of his like right and left-hand man here, at least early in the TV stages.
They would branch off later in their careers. Kurtzman would become the creator of Fringe, Sleepy Hollow, and he would also write Star Trek Into Darkness. Orci kind of did Alias and then the original Star Trek movie. So Abrams is working with his main guys. I mean, he's trusting the guys that kind of got him there, which
you
is interesting.
Go with who brought you to the dance. That's a big life motto of Mike One's.
Yes. Mission Impossible 3.
I don't dance.
I've never heard you say that before. Mission Impossible 3 stars the producer of Hitting It Hard, Elizabeth Town, and Ask the Dust, some guy named Tom Cruise.
I can't wait until we get to Fallout and you like really have to dig for these.
I got one ready. He's done some obscure things, Mr. Tom Cruise, throughout his career, and some notable things. You know, a few of those mixed in.
I've heard of them.
The Oscar winner from Capote for Best Actor, Philip Seymour Hoffman, is the best villain of the series so far, Owen Davian.
I'm just angry about losing him. Like, of all the people we've lost, unfortunately, so early in their careers, I'm just so angry about him, I think, more than any.
Yeah, you imagine him doing more blockbuster films mixed in. You could put him in the MCU somewhere. Just be like a brainy villain there.
We weren't worthy of his services as an actor. He was phenomenal.
As good of a muscle flex scene as there ever has been in terms of this forward to open this movie. True Detective's Michelle Monaghan is Julia. She's a nurse. She's a fiance. She's She's really done that role to perfection in her career. Yeah, Gone Baby Gone.
Cosplaying as Katie Holmes a little bit in this one with the timing. I'll talk about that as we get into
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that kind of
fit. Timing with this, how it worked out.
That kind of fit. I wonder if you know, Tom Cruise dropped Easter eggs there, types of characters he wanted.
Or the church did, whatever.
Or if they just read like the trades slash the, what do they call those in the supermarket tabloids?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, came to it. Pulp Fiction's Ving Rhames returns as Luther.
Just got to make that phone call.
Yes.
He's just waiting around for
on standby there. Shaun of the Dead, Simon Pegg joins the cast of kooky sidekicks as Benji.
Yes.
The guy in the chair, kind
good
of.
Comic
for this
relief,
one.
Yeah.
Big Fish's Billy Crudup is Musgrave, one of the FBI, IMF kind of suits. The Matrixes, that's a hard word to give a plural of. Lawrence Fishburne is Brassel.
Yes, he is.
The Tudors, Jonathan Rhys Meyers joins as Declan. Nikita's Maggie Q is Zen Lee.
Sure.
And the Americans, Carrie Russell is Lindsay Ferris. Couple really spy-looking people.
They had her
involved.
Do her hair straight in this one, so as to not be the Felicity character where it's all scrunched and...
I should rephrase that because I disagree with beautiful people being spies.
Yeah, right. You're kind of...
These are super spies? Maybe super spies work? You know, Gary Oldman as a spy. Okay, I kind of buy that in George Smiley, Tinker Tailor. These people are super spies.
Did you just call Gary Oldman ugly? Is that what just happened?
I called him more normal as he ages. He kind of looks like a guy you'd see on the street.
We call you people normies.
You see Maggie Q on the streets and you're just like...
Yes. Yeah, any of these in production.
That's
yeah.
the face I make they when I see an attractive
movies,
one.
Certainly, yeah.
Yes. It's a mixture of fear and admiration.
Okay. Good
and
to
I
know.
Can't contain it inside
of
my
course,
being.
Yeah. No, it's, at least right. you got it out, though.
Production notes here. David Fincher was set to direct, and he dropped out for creative differences kind of midway through there, that pre-production.
Man, so this could have been gone from a De Palma movie to a John Woo movie to a Fincher movie, who all kind of had their stamps. And J.J. Abrams, you think, did more of the blockbuster adjacent stuff than Fincher certainly would have.
Yeah,
it would have been interesting to see
totally
Fincher take
different
it,
twist
yeah.
on it. Absolutely. Joe Carnahan, the guy who did the Gray, I want to say, with Liam Neeson fights
yep,
a
sure.
wolf movie. Carnahan had Kenneth Branagh, as I like to say, Branagh! Some names are just...
Big MMO favorite of saying it that way, yes.
Yeah, some
We've
names
both
are
been
just,
guilty of that.
They're just fun to yell. That name is one of those names. He was set to be the villain. The Matrix's Trinity, Carrie-Anne Moss, and Black Widow herself, Scarlett Johansson, were set to be in other roles. None of that happened after Carnahan fell out. Thandi Newton, at this stage, was also offered to reprise her role from the second movie, but she declined. That kind of twists things up because she knew he was a spy after the second movie.
Yeah.
And they kind of played with that factor that Michelle Monaghan doesn't know he's a spy. Anyway, Tom Cruise and Carnahan argued over the film's tone, and guess who won that argument?
The guy that's won every argument he's been in since yes. 1980, whatever.
So Carnahan splits, Cruise calls up J.J. Abrams. So the phone call from Cruise seals the deal. We've seen that happen before. Cruise took a major pay cut to allow the film to be pushed back a whole year because Abrams had commitments with Alias. He had commitments with Lost, which was really quite the phenomenon at that time.
Yeah, sure.
So filming commenced in July 2005 in Rome, Italy. The film also shot in Shanghai, Berlin, Vatican City, California, Maryland, and Virginia. Michael Giacchino was brought in to compose the score of this one, following up the first two films, Danny Elfman, Hans Zimmer. Those are some go-to
big names
in terms of movie scores and movie music. The soundtrack featured songs by Kanye West, Twista, Kesha Cole, and BJ. There was a controversy involving this film, so here we go. The marketing circuit for Tom Cruise, he threatened to cancel it. He threatened to cancel his publicity dates for the movie if their subsidiary, Comedy Central, did not stop airing the episode of South Park, Trapped in the Closet.
This is why South Park keeps staying relevant, because they just keep picking fights with the right people and ending up on the right side of it. South Park came out in, what, 96? Mm-hmm. And now we're talking 10 years later. They're battling Tom Cruise and the Church of Scientology?
They already had done battle with Cruise based on their Scientology episode.
Sure.
So now Tom Cruise is just totally out to get South Park here. South Park fans decided to boycott en masse Mission Impossible 3. I did not get that memo, though, because I did not boycott it. I saw this in theaters.
Twitter wasn't big then.
I was a huge sci-fi action movie fan. Sorry, South Park faithful. You're asking too much of me. So that's the production profile. Mike, you got the specs.
I do have the specs, and that is an amazing nugget, how you just refused to do publicity if they didn't pull that episode, and then the backlash. That's just one of those Hollywood nuggets that kind of gets
again,
lost.
Again, Tom
in
Cruise
time.
Won, if I didn't mention that, yeah.
I don't think Tom Cruise it. Loses. I think we're learning that. Mission Impossible 3, some specs here, directed and written by J.J. Abrams, along with some other people on the writing side. But J.J. Abrams, also Mike told you, little-known TV director at the time, only as far as directorially goes. He had TV episodes through his name. He was more of a producer, but as far as directing two episodes of Felicity, the two-part pilot of Lost, and five episodes of Alias to his resume, that was his directing resume before he was
right.
plucked by Tom Cruise for this movie.
He was kind of that super active producer,
right.
that face of the Lost franchise, doing a lot of the media circuits. So I think he kind of changed the game and made those creators what they are today. Like
yeah.
David Benioff and D.B. Weiss for Game of Thrones, all those guys on FX right now.
I mean,
he became that modern-day creator of a television
series. We're sports guys, and sports is big for the coaching trees. Belichick,
sure.
Charlie Weiss, Romeo Crennel.
Coaches are directors in this
yeah.
analogy.
Exactly.
I'm loving
yeah,
this.
Sure.
I'm loving this. Keep
directing,
going.
His directing tree, those he's got a lot of branches that have also obviously seen success.
But he's like the GM in this analogy? I'm pushing for an analogy.
I was going to say Belichick, but
this
yeah,
allegory,
sure.
This is actually an allegory. So, oh, okay. So, yeah, so he's more like a coach GM.
Right. He's
like
the top
Popovich.
Of the tree. He's the root, yeah, and he's got all these different ancillary
Not
guys coming off him.
Stan Van Gundy, but more Popovich. Good.
I was going to make a joke about the Knicks, but I couldn't think of Fizdale.
No!
125-minute runtime for a PG-13 film produced by Cruz Wagner. It was actually the last Mission Impossible produced by Cruz Wagner production company, because J.J. Abrams' Bad Robot then starts playing in Mission
yes,
Impossible
yes,
4.
We'll
get to
on.
That when we get to Mission Impossible 4's half-isode. Distributed by Paramount. All the Mission Impossible movies have been distributed by Paramount up to today. Debuted May 5th, 2006, after being produced on a $150 million budget. We talked about the big financial success that MI2 was, but the big critical flop, it kind
sure,
of was received
sure.
as... Mission Impossible 3 did get $25 million more in its production budget than MI2 filmed 6 years prior. We ended last episode saying that the trust was gone, and that the combined with the litany of controversies Cruise was involved in, Mike just told you about the South Park Viacom battle that he had,
mm-hmm.
and also the Church of Scientology was coming up, the Katie Holmes marriage, making her leave the church, the Christian church, Christianity, coming over, she had to be a Scientologist herself, et cetera, et cetera. This was all big tabloid fodder.
Yes.
And so Cruise was kind of at this personal crossroads in his life that was playing out in the public eye. It was a profitable box office in Mission Impossible 2. It paled in comparison, though, to its predecessors, did Mission Impossible 3.
Right.
$397.85 worldwide box office, $397.85 million, only $134 million domestically. Didn't even make back its budget in domestic box office.
Surprising.
It was number one at the box office for 2 weeks, but made little more than its opening weekend than Mission Impossible 1 did in the same time frame, and was far and away the lowest per screen average during its theatrical run of the three Mission Impossible movies thus far.
Yeah, MI2 made $215. At the domestic.
Cruise was taking hits at home, but his star power wouldn't be denied across the globe, and it was the worldwide box office that ended up saving it, as Mission Impossible 3 finished as the 14th highest grossing domestic property of the year, behind the likes of The Pursuit of Happiness, Over the Hedge, and Click. But because of the worldwide box office, which raked in $263.8 million internationally, it would finish as the 8th highest grossing movie property of 2006 worldwide. So,
yeah.
Again, his troubles at home didn't really translate across the globe.
No,
so
it
saved the box office, basically.
Yeah, 330 worldwide for MI2, 263 for this one. By my math, that 2.5 times math, simple math, it still made $25 million.
Which you would think they'd be happy about. Not right. thrilled with a Tom Cruise leading action property, but...
So, but it was still in the black. Black is good, right?
Black is good, yes, okay. yes.
Learning business.
Whatever The Mummy finished with, it was the opposite. 6.9, nice IMDb rating on 286,000 reviews. 70% Rotten Tomato score. It is not certified fresh on 221 critic scores. 154 positive to 67 negative.
Average, but that's
of,
up.
It is. Average of 6.6 out of 10. It's pretty substantially up from the Mission Impossible 2 Rotten Tomato scores. Audience score on Rotten Tomatoes of 69%, nice. It's 508,000 reviews, average of 3.4 out of 5. A 66 Meta rating, far and away the highest of the series thus far.
Yes.
And high of an 83 with a Meta rating, low of a 40 critical Meta rating. Cinema score was an A-.
Aha.
So, well-received property, Mission Impossible 3. Fans, critics, audiences alike seem to be getting past the controversies that Tom Cruise's personal life was laying out at this time and enjoying the movie. I'm sure in no small part to the supporting cast, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Felicity, we talked about, Michelle
lending
Mayan.
Legitimacy to right. the franchise in many ways just by them being involved.
And really lending legitimacy to J.J. Abrams as a director, mm-hmm. who had not been tested at this point yet. So
the man knows how to cast his things. Just a couple additions here with the awards. It won an ASCAP Film and Television Music Award, top box office score to Michael Giacchino, Location Team of the Year for COLA, the California On Location Awards, Empire Award for Scene of the Year, The Bridge Attack,
sure,
three Golden Trailers, and a Satellite Award for the Best DVD Extras. Of course, it was nominated for a World Stunt Award and five Academy of Sci-Fi Awards, which I thought was interesting and kind of a marker that this film is kind of jumping up in terms of critical reception, in terms of its place in the overall critical eye of things. I think a lot of people, you know, tipped their hat to this movie. The Academy of Sci-Fi just doesn't throw their awards out there. They gave it five.
It's a good point. No, it's a good point. And I think there's a lot of franchises that by their third iteration would kill to have two scripts as strong as Mission Impossible 1 and 3 have
sure.
been. So you can't say what you want about the financials and there being a step down because of whatever happened with the personal life of Tom Cruise and Mission Impossible 2's distrust, but it seems to be a franchise back on the upswing.
Well, you talked about that delayed effect of a
right.
big blockbuster that falls flat a little bit. I wonder if we'll have that with Jurassic Park Fallen Kingdom not being looked at so well by folks.
Point,
so the next Jurassic Park movie, does that go down a little bit?
We'll see. We'll see.
That delayed reaction of fans and critics, it kind of left with a bad taste in their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what happens. So some production values, Mike. I thought these were very strong. Best of the series thus far in
Did
many
you?
Ways. Yeah, I'm in. I like the way J.J. Abrams used the mixture of practical and visual.
Okay.
Now, the next movie has some things that really didn't work for me, even though the highs are very high.
This, oh, that's fine. We're kind of seeing things
Do you
opposite.
Remember this movie, effects you didn't like?
The only thing I'll say, and I think it's an attribute to Tom Cruise's insistence on doing all the stunts himself. My worst scene, and I think it's also an attribute to this screenplay being so immersive for me. I love this movie overall.
Right.
My worst scene, and the worst thing I can come up with, was when he is doing, and we'll talk about, the big swing between the tall buildings.
Yeah.
It just looked so poorly computer-generated because every big action stunt he's done up to this point
yeah.
was really Tom Cruise, like, climbing mountains and falling from things.
Right. I couldn't find anything that said he actually did that. Did you?
I didn't. I assumed they wouldn't let him do something that crazy.
That
so.
Was that crazy. Finally, we found a breaking point. Which they wouldn't allow him to do something.
Swinging between skyscrapers.
And I think, yeah, the nominee for the World Stunt Award, I think that was what he was nominated for. Because somebody actually did something big.
Right.
In this
well,
movie.
That scene to me, it looked green screen. Everything on the bridge, I thought was beautiful.
Which was, in fact, all
right.
green screen.
Oh, that was
really? In the desert. They filmed it in the desert out there, I think, in California. Anyway,
no
California
kidding.
On location.
All right, then I'm a hypocrite, and I don't know what I'm talking about.
Well, that was in the desert, and they CGI'd Industrial Light and Magic, did all the work behind that. And
oh, shit.
And they really they built a bridge there, so they mixed in, they broke it up, they blew it up, they did a lot of stuff there. So
well,
yeah,
it actually angers me more, because if you could pull off that look... Why did the falling between buildings look so fake? I just had a problem with it.
I think Abrams in this film does really well with the smaller scale sets. Like, I love the warehouse. I love how he works in all of the turbines of the field.
Yes, I did too. You're right.
You know, wind power,
right.
Windmills.
There was a lot of good. And it's probably speaking to how highly I think of this film overall that my worst scene is like a 5-second clip of a guy swinging.
It's interesting because he's not Brad Bird necessarily. He doesn't do the city of Dubai. With those big cameras. Then again, that one will have IMAX cameras handling the city of Dubai. So maybe J.J. Abrams didn't have quite enough pull to get the IMAX going for this one. But I thought the visual effects were solid. I think the cinematography was solid as well. I have some serious empathy for Ving Rhames, the actor in this movie, because there's a shot of Tom Cruise. It's a whole scene, actually. Tom Cruise is standing on the edge of one of those two buildings that his stunt guy, finally getting some stunt guy some work, is standing looking over the edge of that building. And Ving Rhames is forced to have a scene with Tom Cruise at the very edge,
the edge of
this.
Of a building.
I wonder if he just needed a whole movie break after this because he's not in the fourth until later. He just has a cameo in the fourth one. Because this might have done him in, because he's forced to like just go right up to the precipice, and Tom Cruise of course is not, but I wonder if I watch that again if he's got like beads of sweat, maybe Industrial Light and Magic had to take that,
or they just had to computer generate the harness that he was hooked up to off him.
I would want to be duct taped to the ground,
no question,
and a million harnesses on me, because I would worry about myself just getting woozy and
just
vertigo
falling over
and standing up that close to that high up.
It's not a scene I would be happy doing myself.
No, sir. Good Lord. So, and I'm very afraid of heights. So, lots of practical effects mixed in. Like I said, that becomes a trademark for J.J. Abrams. All of his other blockbuster movies, in terms of the ones that look the best, I would say Into Darkness would probably be the one that had the most green screen CGI as he goes. But look at J.J. Abrams' Force Awakens. How many practical effects are in there? How many real creatures? How many real sets are made? Chunks of fallen Star Wars spaceships.
It's
Empire
crazy
spaceships.
To think he got his start. Mission Impossible doesn't get enough credit, I don't think, for what it's done overall in the last 2 decades of filmmaking.
Right.
It brought us J.J. Abrams. It finished, pretty much put a good finishing touch on Brian De Palma. It made Limp Bizkit relevant in the movie industry. It's done a lot in these first three movies.
What I'm finding in terms of watching these movies and rewatching these movies, I can't pay attention as a critic to the score and the sound effects really well when I'm biting my nails and biting my hand.
They have
and,
done a hell of a job creating suspense.
I have a wind tunnel in my ears, just like that's what I'm hearing when they're swinging between buildings, or when I'm freaking out over, like, this was a white knuckler in terms of an action movie.
Totally.
I was totally broadsided by this rewatch. Yeah. I really did not expect to watch one of these movies and be freaking out over what was going to happen next. So I guess we'll get into performances now, Mike.
I mean, is there a better person on earth than Philip Seymour Hoffman was?
I thought he was a standout as well.
Oh my gosh.
Does a villain look more like a sociopath than his dead-eyed stare throughout this movie and the way he delivers his lines?
Good. He's so good. Like, give him any character and he's going to knock it out of the park. But yeah, you're totally right. He had the sociopathic tendencies down. He was always he's this calm, reserved villain, which I always find more appealing anyway.
Yeah.
Than the guys that lose their heads and go nuts. But he was this character, this Davian character, who's this black arms dealer who Philip Seymour Hoffman played. Oh my God.
So many times an actor will crazy up their eyes. They'll widen up their eyes when they're screaming at somebody. Philip Seymour Hoffman keeps his eyes as still and as somewhat closed. He doesn't bug his eyes out to scream at Tom Cruise, even when Tom Cruise is like, you know, dangling him out of an airplane.
It's like he's annoyed more so than exasperated.
Yes.
He's like, do I have to raise my voice right now?
Yeah.
That's how
he's
delivering
like,
it.
Philip Seymour Hoffman's talking about, well, I probably don't feel all the feelings other people feel. So I don't feel fear like the other.
I
Owen
also
Davian.
Imagined on set. So there's the big set pieces where, this is a bit of a spoiler, I guess, but Tom Cruise has to wear the mask to become Philip Seymour Hoffman. So obviously on set, it's Philip Seymour Hoffman that has to crouch in the vent system.
That's when he gets expressive,
out.
Right?
But
that's when Philip Seymour Hoffman is smiling.
When he's playing Tom Cruise as Philip Seymour Hoffman.
I love that.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I absolutely love that. So this movie, in terms of establishing scenes and kind of take, which the 2000s did quite a bit from The Dark Knight, which just had a 10-year anniversary in 2008, kind of the culmination of a franchise movie going serious, going dark.
Gritty.
Yeah, this movie started that in many ways. And Tom Cruise, in my opinion, gives another terrific performance.
2 years prior to the MCU coming out, this doesn't get enough credit, I'm telling you.
Stunt work, fantastic as always from Cruise, even though he didn't do the big stunt, we don't think.
He finally let some Tom Cruise lookalikes in Hollywood have a payday. That was nice of him.
Right. With Tom Cruise, they don't have to work at Starbucks that week. That iconic shot of Tom Cruise in all the trailers, so it's not a spoiler, getting blasted from one... with a blast of wind from the bomb there exploded nearby, from one where he's standing on the bridge
off
into
a car.
The car.
Oh, that's beautiful. Beautiful.
That is quite the iconic shot there. I'm a big Carrie Russell fan from The Americans. I buy her as a super spy all day, like
okay,
I said.
Okay, that's a fair statement now in 2018. But in 2006, how much of a departure was this for
I never
her?
Watched Felicity.
Well,
so, but, yeah.
I didn't either, but that's what her bread and butter was, you know? That kind of drama-driven show.
Correct.
On primetime drama, and she's doing the super spy stuff now. It's such a departure. I thought she was great in it, too.
I can't think back that far and, like, readjust my sight. Like, now, after The Americans, after what she's done.
Right. She's a Russian spy. She can't be trusted. I get you.
The movies work on me. TV works on me. I am manipulated easily. I thought they got the team right in this one. Jonathan Rhys Meyers, Maggie Q, they make sense as super spies again, but you also have comic relief in Simon Pegg, and you got his buddy now, Ving Rhames, talking to Tom Cruise throughout this movie about,
love
hey,
that.
Man, you I can't be married
that.
And a spy.
I can't tell you how much I loved that aspect. I thought that was one of the more genius things Abrams did. That
yes.
We're in the third movie, and we're getting so many layers added to this friendship of this guy that's been there for every movie so far, and Ramsey's Luther character, and you're actually getting a legitimate onion building of this introspective relationship these two men have.
We got this. We got 30 seconds before this thing is ready, whatever timer's on, whatever else, and Ving Rhames is going to talk to you about your new engagement.
Yeah, having an argument about how feasible it is to keep a meaningful relationship as a spy while they're counting down.
I liked that they brought in the higher-ups, the suits, Lawrence Fishburne and Billy Crudup. I think they do a nice job. There's stuff inside
of
IMF there.
The third movie is about time, where you have to have some kind of agency oversight and wonder, like, there's got to be consequences for these actions, right?
Right.
Somebody has to be yelling at these guys.
Now, Michelle Monaghan, she's always been underrated in my book. I thought she does a nice job in her performance because she's in, you know, a family and friends party early in the movie. Later, she's on a job as a nurse, and she's also in the thick of it as a hostage and as someone caught in the middle of this entire, you see it in the first scene, an entire spy game. I don't love the dialogue. I don't love that opening scene at her house or one of those first few scenes where
the engagement
domesticated party. Tom Cruise and Michelle Monaghan. I thought that was some of the weaker stuff, I would say.
I would argue with that with you because I don't know how you can like the Luther Ethan Hunt play by play.
Because it's I just think it's so unexpected. It's so like Indiana Jones thing.
But isn't that what gave Philip Seymour Hoffman's bad guy so much more oomph in this?
You have to establish it. I just thought it was Orsi and Kurtzman dialogue wasn't great. Like it's just almost over the top. And it's not. I've seen worse. I've heard worse. It's not. It's not up there with some of the crappiest. I mean, watch Taken or The Equalizers. I mean, you don't go to Mission Impossible 3.
Cancel Denzel and Liam Neeson.
You don't go to The Equalizer. You don't go to Taken movies to see that domestic drama played out like it's one
of
the.
I conceded. I thought Abrams did a good job with making that relationship
happen. It's not American Beauty in the bedroom for movies that came out a little before this movie level domestic drama.
Sure.
So I guess we get an Oscar lens here, buddy. Anything else on the performances?
No, but Philip Seymour Hoffman, if he was in a thing, nominate him. I think that should be a fair rule. Just nominate him.
Supporting actor?
Yes.
For this?
Of course.
Just leveling up this entire franchise, carrying it on his back into legitimacy.
I would have no problem with him. I would have no problem with Abrams. I mean, this was a great script. This was a good movie.
I just wonder if critics who didn't, because this wasn't a 93% or like the next movie on Rotten Tomatoes. This was a 70%.
This wasn't received well.
I wonder if those some scenes that didn't quite play well.
It's going to take a lot to convince me it wasn't the jaded, being jaded after Mission Impossible.
That's an effect. Absolutely. Critics
supporting actor that year of 2007 Oscars was Alan Arkin, Little Miss Sunshine, Jackie Earle Haley for Little Children, Jaimin Hansu for Blood Diamond. I'm sure I mispronounced that. Eddie Murphy for Dreamgirls, of course.
Talk about bad dialogue. Blood Diamond was rough.
Mark Wahlberg in The Departed. So there was an opening here.
Yeah, well, Wahlberg had that showy, that performance where getting all the zingers and the dialogue.
Olive branched him after talking bad about
him. I loved him in The Departed. He made me laugh hard in The Departed, which was shock in terms of you're not expecting to laugh in The Departed.
Right.
But I love that goddamn movie. Oh, my God. I can watch that one on loop. Yes, Mark Wahlberg is terrific in that movie, but he is like the... You know, the popular pick.
Right.
You know, the popularity choice.
So sure.
Maybe that's why he's the popularity choice over Philip Seymour Hoffman in this case. We'd have to look at that, a whole rundown of that year. I don't know. I thought the screenplay, like you said, very, very strong. It's not all that complicated, but to write these action sequences the way he writes them, to incorporate the settings more so than in other films. Like we talked about the mouse, as goofy as that was, incorporating a mouse into the ducks.
Yes.
When they're in Mission Impossible 1 was so memorable and it added so much tension to that scene. This movie actually incorporates the warehouse and dealing with all the multiple levels of that small building. It incorporates the city streets of Shanghai.
Yeah.
Incorporates the big buildings next to each other, swinging from one to the other, and incorporates the wind turbine, you know, the sea.
It was beautiful.
For a helicopter. I thought that was so cool.
It was very innovative, too. I don't remember having seen anything similar to that prior in 2006.
So, unfortunately, probably not an Oscar movie otherwise. It's one of the better popcorn action movies of the decade, I think.
We're getting more serious with them, which is really nice to see.
So, we're going to get into spoilers here, buddy?
Yeah, let's do it. We're not going to do a big spoiler dance breakdown like we do for a full Oscar sprint profile. We're already running a little long off our half-isode, but that's a credit to how much we enjoyed this movie. This is going to be a spoiler section from here on out. Anything you hear from this point on is going to involve the twists and turns of Mission Impossible 3. If you don't want to hear the spoilers, or if you haven't seen the movie in a while and you want to go back and then watch that and then come back and click from this point on, feel free to do so. But from here on out, it is all spoilers all the time. Mike's going to take us through a little rundown of the plot.
A retired Ethan Hunt plans to marry Michelle Monaghan early on in this story. Obviously, we get the flash forward to begin the film where Philip Seymour Hoffman is counting to 10, threatening to shoot Michelle Monaghan's character.
The best opening so far in the series.
Both handcuffed to chairs. PSH is just going for it in this scene. Again, keeping his eyes steady. But he's.
I feel like I should be counting
scary.
To 10 while you're doing the plot recap in the way he did.
So he's talking about a MacGuffin, the rabbit's foot. Tell me where the rabbit's foot is, or I shoot her. We don't get to see how that scene ended up, of course. So we flash back now to a domesticated Tom Cruise is at his engagement party, and he is celebrating with Michelle Monaghan. All the friends are gushing over him, but he's kind of sneaking out because he gets like a notice that he needs to meet with Billy Crudup.
Mysterious phone call about them winning a trip into some kind of cruise.
Billy Crudup tells him at the gas station that if he chooses to accept that his mission is to help a captured Kerry Russell, who was his star pupil, the first that Tom Cruise trained and got out into the field as an IMF agent. He does agree to do so, tells his wife he's going on a sales conference trip or something as a member of the Transport Authority.
Works for the Department of Transportation, yeah. Yes.
So Hunt brings a team of Ving Rhames, Maggie Q, and Jonathan Rhys Meyers to break her out of that warehouse where Owen Davian, the Philip Seymour Hoffman character, and a bunch of goons have her tied to a chair. We got a lot of that in this movie. And more than that, she has an explosive device inside her brain, or shot up her nose, we come to find out. This is an awesome sequence. I got to work through the warehouse in a shootout. They get Jonathan Rhys Meyers has got a copter waiting, but he just has kind of a transport copter waiting. Once they get out of the warehouse in a crazy action sequence, getting out of the building, they have to get in that copter, fly away through the sea of wind turbines, the forest of wind turbines for wind power there, and they're getting attacked by a Comanche helicopter.
While being chased through the air, yes.
He's also foreshadowing a major setup and the later payoff for this device, where this explosive device in Kerry Russell's head. We gotta take these paddles, these whatever they call those medical paddles,
defibrillators,
and shock her to unconsciousness and death.
Yes,
momentary death, and then
to fry the charge.
She's freaking out because we got a ticking clock in her head. She's freaking out with hearing all this noise and holding it like it's a migraine headache from hell.
Yeah.
So we learn later that it's like a 4-minute charge, PSH will say, and while they're trying to elude this Comanche helicopter, while Maggie Q's almost falling out of the copter, Tom Cruise is trying to charge a defibrillator.
J.J. Abrams is so good.
So there's all these ticking so clocks in that scene. It's such great writing for an action scene.
Yeah, it is.
They fail in terms of Kerry Russell's death. It is as creepy and as disturbing a death in an action movie as we've seen in a while, with those eyes going crazy. It's emotional because she says, thank you for saving me. And then she gets the
You think
thing.
She's going to do it? You think it's going to be like every other action movie? The hero's going to win. And then, no, she just dies.
They did get away with a couple of computers where the hard drives were fried. They explode, the mm-hmm. boxes that these laptops were in. But a couple things were salvaged by Simon Pegg's character, I think it is. So Cruz is grilled by the IMF, headed by Lawrence Fishburne, who seems like that typical Lethal Weapon angry boss character for cops that cause a lot of damage.
Oh, damn it, Riggs and Murtaugh.
Billy Crudup is good cop in this scenario, kind of the manager of Cruz's team. Simon Pegg is the guy in the chair. The tech guy gives him that intelligence on Vatican City, which is where PSH will be next on Davian. He's making a drop there. They uncover a few emails where he tells them, or purpose the plans. It's the plans for the rabbit's foot in this case. And his team, Tom Cruise's team, will go rogue without Crudup's knowledge, go rogue and intercept Davian and these rabbit's foot plans. So Cruz, JRM, Reese Myers, and Maggie Q with Ving Rhames perform quite the elaborate breach into the Vatican City gala right there at the Pope's headquarters. Maggie Q must get a facial scan of PSH during the party. She's wearing quite the dress. My God.
It's gorgeous.
You have Cruz sneaking in over the wall, changing cameras around. You have all kinds of costume changes for Jonathan Rhys Meyers. You got scuba Ving Rhames underneath the Vatican coming through the grates. All kinds of stuff going on. They get the scan of PSH's his face. You got the banter between Ving Rhames and Tom Cruise in the catacombs there, talking about
the
fiancé
relationship
stuff.
While you're a spy. Yep.
Then you got this great scene in the bathroom where, after Maggie Q spills wine on PSH's shirt, the biggest bodyguard in the history of bodyguards, the Mountain from Game of Thrones, stays outside of the bathroom while PSH is in there trying to clean his shirt a little bit. Of course, that's the perfect time for Tom Cruise, with the mask, newly formed mask of PSH on, really creepy scene, zaps him with a taser.
The old switcheroo, yeah.
And they get it, but there's also a ticking clock because the voice modulator isn't ready yet. They force him to read a little blurb while they're trying to get
under
the voice
duress at gunpoint, yeah.
While this,
while he's being held up by himself.
The giant in some WWF scenario is waiting outside, about to come in. So they do that just in time. They blow up, tragically, the greatest car in the history of the world that Maggie Q drove in, but they escape under a grate where Ving Rhames, just beautiful choreography in this heist scene. They get away on a speedboat while PSH's guys think he's dead in the blown up
they
car.
They hope, yes.
Because, you know, Tom Cruise impersonates PSH. Just,
yeah, the idea,
the
idea was
Q.
to convince everyone that Davian Hoffman's character had died. Obviously, that doesn't
come
to fruition.
Going back to the hotel with Maggie Q's alias there. Now, en route to Virginia. In the plane back to the U.S., they threaten, Tom Cruise threatens PSH to try and figure out what the hell the rabbit's foot is. This is where we talked about PSH being calm and cool, still screaming threats
at Tom Cruise. I kind of wish J.J. Abrams just went full troll and just literally called it a MacGuffin, as opposed to the rabbit's foot throughout the movie.
And Tom Cruise, that would be the meta joke that makes you happy. Tom Cruise is trying to get whatever the hell this is out of Davian, while Davian is just saying, do you have a fiance? I'm going to kill her in front of you. Oh, and get just threatening the hell out of him.
This makes me rock hard.
Tom Cruise might might drop him to the abyss of the plane. All of his characters are screaming at him. All of his friends are screaming at him not to do it. Ving Rhames,
we'll circle back to this scene because I have a lot to say about it, but my God.
So they're en route back to Virginia on the Chesapeake Bay Bridge across the ocean. Again, this was shot in the desert, made to look like the ocean. I thought it really worked.
Unreal.
Their armored transport carrying PSH is attacked by what looks like to be IMF goons or American goons, by a SWAT team and by, you know, all kinds of missile launchers.
As any good action movie bad guy would, he has the backup plan in Act Two to get himself out of trouble.
With the helicopter. So we know there's a mole in the IMF. We don't know who that is yet. So PSH gets away. I thought there was a really cool gadget in terms of all that foam that they put on the outside of the truck or the prisoner transport truck.
I'm with you. Everything they've done, they're kind of like the Saw of James Bond tech, if that makes sense. Like, every new piece of technology comes out, it's really innovative.
You went for a horror movie analogy again.
I don't
what
know
a surprise.
Anything else.
Tom Cruise, immediately suspecting that Davian's group is going to kidnap his girlfriend, gets back to the hospital in a rush, tries to find Michelle Monaghan. Worst fears are realized that she has been
taken.
Liam Neeson? And he gets a phone call, and he, even though he says to Davian, I have a very specific set of skills. No, Davian says, you got 48 hours to get me the rabbit's foot or she's dead.
Mm-hmm.
Right then, Tom Cruise gets the IMF team, and he gets captured by that IMF team. Billy Crudup helps him break out of custody there, which is a pretty cool escape, where I know they could have had a huge sequence there, but instead Tom Cruise just does this little goofy thing with the radio.
That was clever. And you also, before that, you had the Captain America elevator scene before Captain America had his elevator scene.
Yes, you know? Right. So many great... This movie is nonstop. Yeah. There's so much great action in this movie.
Plot,
yes, he beats the crap out of a couple goons in an elevator. Hunt somehow busts out the rabbit's foot in Shanghai.
Yes.
We have a crazy-ass scene where the ticking clock is getting down to the wire, and he has to perform. They don't have people on the ground. They don't have things scoped out and set up. Basically, he's like, all right, the only way I'm doing this is I got to break through the window on the floor where this rabbit's foot is. I have some of the plans, but we're going in. We're hard charging. We're getting out.
He basically decides to do a glorified swing between the top of two skyscrapers.
Right. I love that they shoot a lot of baseballs at the guards. Yes. The guards are disoriented. And then, yes, that was a crazy ass scene. What's so cool about it is, you know, you're up high, they got to get down in a hurry, they can't go through the building, so parachute down. And it's just so harrowing.
Yeah.
Like, the parachute works for a while, he finally gets into another room in lower level of the
and all
the
while
skyscraper.
While he's parachuting down, he's getting fired up by the guards on the rooftop.
Yes, but the wind blows up his parachute again, and you just see that Indiana Jones crazy facial expression out of Tom Cruise. Oh my God, oh my God, I'm falling again. Now I'm dead. And he's falling down, and of course he managed to somehow slow up enough to land on the ground. Then now he's running through traffic. He's doing this Frogger impression. He's got this scenario where he's in the back of a, or he gets on a truck. Then of course Maggie Q and the team, they meet up with him, and Tom Cruise basically tells them to get home because I got to make this exchange. So Tom Cruise is on his own. He makes the exchange. He drinks what they tell him to drink, which basically knocks him out. And we get into that first scene, the very first scene of the movie. Count of 10, Philip Seymour Hoffman shoots the woman.
Mm-hmm.
We think is Monaghan. It is not Monaghan, which makes no sense to me why it wouldn't be Monaghan. That's my probably worst scene.
There are issues, yes.
Okay, that's my worst scene, because it makes no... Why not be Monahan. You already threatened it to be Monahan. No, it was the translator from the Vatican City.
Because they had to make sure the rabbit's foot was real, so they had to... That is explained away. Billy Crudup's character turns heel.
Right.
Reveals himself to be aligned
with... Which I loved.
...Davian the whole time, and he says, don't worry, Julia's safe. I had to convince Davian not to kill her, but I can only spare her life if you tell me what Ferris knew.
Yes. Okay, so that's exactly why. So, plot hole... avoided. We have Billy Crudup getting nice and close to Tom Cruise as he's trying to interrogate him. He's not good at this.
Don't ever get close to Ethan Hunt. Tom Cruise
literally bites him and then somehow wrangles free of his restraints from there.
It was a big Metal Gear Solid CQC, close quarter combat type thing, if you're video game fans out there. It was pretty cool to see.
It was cool. So Tom Cruise calls up Simon Pegg. He's been disavowed at this point, but Simon Pegg doesn't want to answer and help him out. But of course, you have a funny international criminal. You have a funny back and forth.
He aided and abetted an international criminal.
That's really good. He helps Tom Cruise get to the safe house of the goons of Owen Davian, where Maggie Monahan is. I'm melding the two names there. And basically, Tom Cruise runs through not necessarily rural Shanghai, but like village Shanghai, which is pretty cool.
The sprinting. I know it's become a joke of itself, and it's something I'm going to keep harping on, but I know Tom Cruise needs a sprinting montage in each of these movies, but it's worked well into the plot.
You know what? He doesn't have terrible running form. I'm a track coach. The dude gets his knees up to his waist. He gets a lot of the arm action.
Right.
Maybe a little too much arm action, especially later, and you're supposed to settle in with those arms.
Well, he's got, yeah. He's not supposed to go in an action mode.
You're not supposed to go cheek to cheek, you know, as you're getting out of your acceleration phase, and you're just trying to float. But he does do a nice job with his running form there. Now he's in the last bad guy castle here, this little room, and I love how the Chinese guys at the front, it's just like a restaurant, basically point back just to where Monahan is.
Tell him where all the bad stuff is going on.
All right, so he finds her, but there's Owen Davian. Last fight with Owen Davian. Oh, by the way, you got a device in your nose now, so now he gets that migraine headache from hell. Fighting Owen Davian, somehow he grits his teeth through it. And he starts beating up Owen Davian, turns the tide. He kicks him outside into traffic. And Owen they're rolling in traffic. Whoever's on the bottom wins because the guy on top gets run over by a truck. That's Owen Davian.
That's funny.
Tom Cruise, migraine headache from hell, teaches Michelle Monaghan how to use his gun or use whatever gun he found. Michelle Monaghan needs to know that before she needs to know that he's going to electrocute himself. Because they can't find a defibrillator, and they just find like a fuse box where he takes
exposed wires
and electrocutes himself to death.
Yeah,
and says you can bring me back. Of course, she's a CPR expert.
She's a nurse.
Before she can be a CPR expert, she has to be win a shootout,
trained assassin
with a couple of goons. Now
she does.
Yeah, she does. You buy it a little bit. I don't know if I buy all of it, but she does win it. I mean, she's a nurse, and she wins a shootout with a bunch of goons. Anyway, with two goons, I think it was, she then resuscitates Tom Cruise. And we have perhaps the most rewarding, even though filmically it's not great because there's a freeze frame that ends it, but a rewarding reunion scene with Lawrence Fishburne patting him on the back. She gets to meet all of his work friends. I like that scene. Team's back together. There's cheers for him. Yeah, I love that. Him walking out with her from IMF, the whole office comes together and cheers crazy, them away. Yeah. Like, because they got married in secret somewhere in there. I did not
happily
mention.
Ever after.
Yeah.
Until the next movie.
So that's our plot.
Yeah.
Do we choose to accept it?
It's the best. It's very convoluted, as all the Mission Impossible ones are, but I think there was as few twists and turns in this one and as opposed to any of the three and certainly up to the fourth one yet, and I appreciated that because it forced Abrams to rely on having a coherent through line.
Right.
You're basically chasing one plot this whole time as opposed to twists and turns. The only big twist is the Billy Crudup character, which I don't think pays off. I think it's weak.
I forgot that he was the heel all along.
I wanted more about him to know, because his reasoning for turning heel, it's just...
They don't do good with backstory on why John Voight's and Billy Crudup's turn heel in these movies.
Voight, at least you could understand, he's older, he wanted to retire. Billy Crudup's reasoning, here's the in 18 hours, the rabbit's foot will be delivered to its Middle Eastern buyers and will have the intel to prove it. U.S. military strike will follow, and our country will do what it does best. Clean up infrastructure, democracy wins.
Yeah, he's like, we got to work with the bad guys.
Yeah.
Because if we don't work with them and war we just eliminate will stop? Them.
Like, no.
Well, but he's like, the four will come up in his place and they'll be worse than him. So we might as well work with the devil we know. Yeah, I don't
I
like
think
that.
That was my biggest problem aside from the visual effects thing. I think that was, you either needed more exposition on Crudup's character or you needed a better twist. But
right.
Regardless, the movie worked for me.
So best scenes for me is simple. All the action sequences. There's a bunch of them. I love them all. I love the Vatican one the most, I think. How about you?
On the chopper, when they have Philip Seymour Hoffman, the tete-a-tete between
it was good.
Cruise and Hoffman. Oh, my God.
All right. You went for one of the showdowns.
Ethan hanging him out the chopper, and Hoffman's not really losing it. Ethan's cutting his cord one by one. When they finally bring him back in, because Ving Rhames is screaming, Ethan, this isn't you, don't do it.
Sure.
After Hoffman's threatened his loved one, so he knows he has something on Hunt to get under his skin.
Yes.
Brings him back in the chopper, and then Hoffman's quote, what I'm selling and who I'm selling to is the last thing you should be concerned about, Ethan. Oh! Goosebumps! He's got his name, he's got intel on him. It was a beautiful scene for me.
So if you've seen something like this in the WWE...
Oh.
As a promo for a fight,
I would pop.
As a setup, this is like the best version of that ever.
It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah.
Yes. That was my overall best scene. The action pieces are great. The relationship building between Luther, Ving Rhames' character, and Tom Cruise, I loved as well. I also appreciated what Abrams did in the first 25 minutes of this movie. I mean, look at what he did in that little time frame after the warehouse. Right. So he's already lost. We've already done away with who we think is going to be a main character in Kerry Russell. So that's a major departure from the series thus far. Big character.
Absolutely.
Dead. The strain between Ethan's home and work life, giving him another layer to his character, proving that he has to, you know, lie to his wife saying he's in the Department of Transportation, but he's really not. He's doing all
However,
this stuff.
I just remembered Mission Impossible 1. 2 didn't kill a lot of big names. Mission Impossible 1 killed a lot of big
they
names.
They did it at the start. Okay. Yeah. They did it
that's
at the start.
That's becoming we got to rack up the body count at the end of this and do like an in memoriam segment.
Right.
Some of the best actors we have been taken down as members of the IMF.
And it's probably the best opening scene in Mission Impossible history.
That's awesome.
I mean, it was awesome. The countdown, you think it's going to be going against, you know, finding the rabbit foot, but the rabbit foot is really secondary to kind of just killing the Davian character.
Absolutely. And what I love about action movies and movies in general, when you can market an entire movie with the first scene of your movie,
yeah.
And then that's what they did here. I'm so impressed.
I'm with you. And I'm chock full of best scenes. I really, really like this movie.
Setups and payoffs really worked for me, too, in the script. I loved how they set up the device in their brain, mental explosive there. I thought that worked extremely well. I loved how we have bookend scenes with Owen Davian and Tom Cruise making threats of one another, like you said,
in terms of standoffs.
Yeah, I think I kind of mixed in all my final thoughts throughout. So I love this movie, this has been my favorite rewatch of the series. I loved rewatching one, but I like this rewatch more.
We've had three movies, and two of them have been genuine joys.
Mm.
One of them has been an abortion.
That was fun to watch in another way. Because
it was fun to listen to.
Okay.
The soundtrack.
I love that pod. Am I too bad?
Yeah.
Plus, I love re-listening to my pod. Yeah.
That's Mission Impossible 3 in a nutshell. It's really worth rewatching.
Really
guys.
Good.
Whether you're a Mission Impossible fan or not, go back and check this movie out.
Do it.
Let us know what you think. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, get at us. Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook. Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram. MM and Oscar on Twitter. Mike, Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com. .com, Reddit, where everywhere you type in Mike, Mike, and Oscar, you will see us waving back at you. And if you can leave us an iTunes review, that would really, really help us.
Really helps. Really helps. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, so otherwise, Mike, any final words of wisdom?
I can't wait till Mission Impossible 4.
There you go.
Ghost Protocol. It's not wisdom, but it's...
Maybe we can be hired to be in 7 when it
comes out. Cogent thought, yeah. I can't wait. This has been a fun-ass series
it really
to
has
record.
It's surprising.
Yeah, get on board with us if you're just popping in here. Go back to 1 and 2. Get ready for 4, 5, and 6. Yeah.
Reality sucks, guys. Keep watching these impossible missions and movies with us, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.